Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. One of the many services we offer is help at home with minor home maintenance. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
And welcome back to Project Independence and You here at WCWP.org, Senior Talk Radio. I'm Rebecca Miller. I'm your guest host for the show today, along with our fantastic and talented Christina Liu, who is a radio show producer, brings every guest in, coordinates, just gets the show going every single week, going into our, what year, ninth, 10th year, unbelievable. Otto Loos is, of course, the co-host. He's been generous enough to volunteer as a co-host since state of emergency. You've pretty much been the co-host since March. And through Otto, today we have our excellent guest, Jim Kane, who is retired from FDNY. He's a retired deputy chief. And we're learning a lot about his career and also what led him to be part of the incident management team. So before the break, Jim, you were talking about that process. So we can pick up where we left off.
Okay, so after the higher up chiefs realized they needed more help, they put out a request for volunteers who wanted to be a part of the team. So I, along with other people, had been questioning, what are we doing to better ourselves as a department so that if this happens again, we're better prepared? So at an early age, I was always taught, don't complain about something unless you want to be part of the solution. Mm-hmm. So I volunteered to be part of the solution, went through the process of taking some classes and everything, and was picked to be on the team. And from there, it probably changed my career more dramatically than anything else I've ever done. It gave me the opportunity to see parts of this country that I would never see, you know, that I probably never would have seen. Because the only training, true training that was available to be a part of these teams was out west. There are what they call 17 type 1 incident management teams. And they're the people that handle all these large wildfires
right,
all over the country every year. And that's the people who were training us. So I had the great fortune of becoming a member of one of those teams for 2 years.
Did that mean that you had to relocate or you
No. What it means is anytime they were, all these people that are on these teams have other jobs.
Right.
Most of them, I would say 90% of them work for the federal government. Most of them work for a national park or something. So mm-hmm. they just get to, they call it getting deployed when they're called to come to assist. And when you get called, you just leave your job and you go to that. Now, the Fire Department of New York actually has an agreement, still does, with the Department of Agriculture that we're allowed to send members out to work with these teams still to this day. And the federal government reimburses the Fire Department for our time back there that we spend out there. So I got to go out on, I don't remember, it was 13, 14 different deployments out there to different locations, Montana, Navajo Mountain. I mean, some really, really, really unbelievably beautiful places. Navajo Mountain, really, because the only way you're allowed onto the Navajo land is if you're invited. So that was really, truly an experience to go there. And they treated you like you were gold. I mean, they were so happy to see you there. Because you were there to help them. And that's truly what this team does, is it comes in and it comes, makes chaos, it takes chaos and makes order out of it. And that's what an incident management team really does. They focus on the individual problem, and it lets the agency you're working for continue with their everyday business, and they handle the emergency for them. It's a whole system in place that when you follow it, it breaks things down into the simplest form. And you follow certain principles and things just seem to go along more smoothly once you get a handle on what you're doing. So that's a real brief description. Right. But
so was it culture shock for you in a sense? You know, here you are, this urban, highly populated suburban kind of firefighter. And all of a sudden you're training in forests where, I mean, these fires are clearly violent and all.
Okay, so culture shock, yes. Let me set one thing clear, though. The incident management team itself manages the operation. We actually bring in wildland firefighters that work underneath us. So once or twice, I was actually out in the forest during the fire, but right. I'm usually in a base camp or an incident command post managing these people. However, that doesn't mean I'm living out there in luxury. Right. Every time I went out, I would go out for 2 weeks at a time. I would live in a tent for 2 weeks, a single person or a two person tent for 2 weeks, 16-hour days, eating out of a food truck for 16 days. So culture shock, yes, it was an experience.
Jim, are there just always fires in the forest? Like, is there always some fire somewhere that is really, yes. you know, dangerous?
Yes, the temperature has a lot to do with it. The drier the humidity and everything, the more chances of fire. They have actually changed their tactics in the last 8 years, I think it is. They went from a direct attack where they would go right at the fire, very, very costly to do, to an indirect attack. And because of this indirect attack where they try and surround everything, the fires seem to be growing, not seem to be, they are growing larger and larger. And it's, I'm not going to say it's backfiring on them, but the cost of the fires are getting close to what they were when they were doing the direct attacks also. So there's pros and cons no matter what you do. They were looking to save money, but.
You know, I often wondered, there's been an awful lot of fires out west lately. Mm-hmm. And you see scenes where planes are flying overhead, dropping some stuff. And I often question in my mind, with no knowledge, how effective is that really? It's sort of like, it's to me, it looks like, how can that really do anything to stop this blazing fire?
Like, how much are they actually covering? How much are they able to really?
Yeah.
So what you're seeing is there's two different operations that take place there. One is they're dropping water actually on the fire. And when you're up close, you can actually see it. They're actually dropping thousands of gallons of water at a time, and it does have an effect. What they're usually showing you is the worst part of the fire where you can't see any effect. But the other one that really has an effect is you'll see them, and it'll be a retardant that they're dropping to try and create a barrier where the fire will get to that area and it will stop burning. And usually you can tell a difference with that one because it'll look either purple or pinkish in color as they're dropping it. Sometimes that's out of a fixed wing plane as opposed to a helicopter. And that covers a larger area. That stuff is all biodegradable, and eventually it wears off and you don't even know it was dropped. But that has a tremendous effect on stopping the fires. But again, a very costly thing to do.
Now, the IMT, I read some of your stuff, not only gets involved with fires, but you were like at Katrina, Hurricane Sandy. What's the role there? Like the fire department gets involved with all kinds of catastrophes, basically, is what it comes down to.
Yes. And what happens is when we were formed initially, it was to support the city of New York, and we still do that. And that was our true mission. In the last 7 or 8 years, we had permission to do both New York City and as a team go elsewhere. Now, we are considered up until 5 years ago, we were considered a regional resource. We could be used anywhere up in the Northeast. We went to floods up in Broome County. I went to the snowstorm up in Buffalo when they had 7 feet of snow. This is called all hazards incident management as opposed to wildland fire incident management. And that's really where our training is now, is in the all hazards world. We had a deal with our chief of department while I was in charge of the team that we could go anywhere in the country we wanted as long as we could provide a second team available in the city of New York, which we were able to do. So we had increased we actually had close to 300 members on the team when I was in charge. And that was just for redundancy because not everybody's always available and we needed to have two teams in place. So to get 300 people trained up to that level was quite an event. You talk about Sandy, we were working in the city of New York. We worked for 13 weeks, but we weren't working for the fire department. We were working for the Department of DOHMH, Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, doing safety checks on people with no heat and no water and their living conditions. They're in buildings they shouldn't have been in. We actually had 2,500 National Guards people working under us, along with other civilians and everything, to perform this operation. Most of the times when we're in the city of New York, we're working for another agency. I can tell you right now, they are in charge of the fire department's inoculation program right now, which is almost complete. And the city has just told them as of this past Monday that they're going to be in charge of getting the other 200,000 city employees inoculated. So that's what the team is actually working on right now. So we can do just about anything. Like I said before, it takes the burden of that large scale project off of the agency you're working for and lets them concentrate on their day-to-day business. Now you're still, you know, responsible to that agency and you meet with them every day and everything, but you take a big load off of them when you come in. So,
Jim, even though you're retired, do you still get involved with IMT at all? Like, you know, consulting, chatting, talking?
I actually still teach it. I've gone all over the country teaching this. I've gone to Alaska, I've gone to Hawaii, I've probably gone to at least 40 states teaching different parts of incident management. The broad picture of it, and believe it or not, when I first started, I was in what's called the finance section, which is pretty funny since my wife has to balance a checkbook because I just can't do it. But I've taught finance all over the world. Right now, for the last 6.5 years, I've been an adjunct instructor at Texas A&M University, where I will travel down there for a week at a time and teach classes as part of a cadre that teaches incident management to people from all over the country, because it's a FEMA course that's grant funded. It doesn't cost the students anything to come. And it's one of the first qualifications they need to become a member of a team. So that way I'm still involved. But as of the city, I am no longer allowed to be involved officially. But since my son is on the team, I am still unofficially involved. You know, he keeps me abreast of what's going on. And the current incident commander actually calls fairly frequently for advice and things that happened, which was the same that I did with the person I replaced.
So. Well, let's take a break now because we have to take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back. We're speaking with Jim Kane, and this is Project Independence and You.